We have a quorum, so I will officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Coonan moves the minutes of February 15th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Coonan. Before we get into testimony, I'd like to have Ms. Dalton, I will move House File 2235 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. I will now move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the order that the author desires. So I move the H2235 A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended before us. Ms. Dalton, if you could please describe what the bill does.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what House File 2235 does is it sunsets all of the Minneapolis, the general sales tax, the extra lodging tax on lodging with more than 50 rooms, the liquor tax, and the food and beverage tax in the downtown area. These were all the sales taxes that were enacted in 1986 to originally fund the convention center, and they will essentially sunset in the end of 2020, which is when all the current bonds for the convention center are due to be paid off. This does not sunset the entertainment tax in Minneapolis. That tax was actually enacted in 1967 as a general fund source of revenue for the city of Minneapolis. Currently, that tax is a backup tax to some of the existing bonds for the convention center, but the law that enabled that tax was not specifically related to the convention center funding. So that one remains intact.
Okay. Is there anyone that would like to testify on House File 2235 as amended? Oh, that was easy. Any questions for members? No, I know. We have testified. We're waiting for a list here. Let's see. Okay. Melvin Tennant. Is Melvin Tennant here? And Your Honor, certainly. We're very fortunate today to have the Mayor of Minneapolis with us, Mr. R.T. Rybeck, and we have Melvin Tennant, Director from Minneapolis. So if you could please, Director of Meet Minneapolis, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Melvin Tennant, Meet Minneapolis, our Convention and Visitors Association, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, and then Your
Honor. I'm R.T. Rybeck. I'm the Mayor of Minneapolis.
Welcome to the committees, gentlemen.
Very.
Okay, if you could please present your testimony.
Good, very good. I wanted to introduce it, if I could, and then turn it over to Melvin Tennant. Thank you. I appreciate being here, and I always welcome an opportunity to talk about the hospitality taxes in Minneapolis and what they have been doing as far as the partnership between the state and the city of Minneapolis. The city of Minneapolis runs a big business for the state of Minnesota. It's the convention business. It's a hospitality industry that, with all the discussion we have, for instance, about sports stadiums, I actually believe they're important. But the convention center dwarfs them in importance, not just for the city of Minneapolis, but frankly, more importantly, for the state of Minnesota. Spending on visitors in the city of Minneapolis is about $900 million a year. So if you sort of just do a back-of-the-napkin calculation on what that means for the state of Minnesota, that's about $60 million a year in sales taxes. The convention center itself brings in, we estimate, about $200 million a year, which would be, again, this back-of-the-napkin sort of calculation, about $15 million a year to the state of Minnesota. The city of Minneapolis supports that with taxes collected only in the city of Minneapolis. The state convention center is supported by the sales taxes solely in the city of Minneapolis. Those taxes are used to promote and grow events. Cutting off the sales taxes used in the city of Minneapolis to support the state convention center would be the equivalent of the state punching itself in the face. The point being that what you really need to do is to recognize that for many years we have run a very, very good business for the state. Melvin Tennant, who leads that operation for us, is part of an effort that works very far into the future. For example, when we think about 2020, as long out there as it seems to be, we're currently booking conventions in 2018. And we move very aggressively on that on behalf of the state. when you really look at how this this building operates, you have to also recognize the fact that there are about 200 people who are employed by this tax, by the city directly, but about 1,000 contractors who are at any given time within the convention center, and most of those contractors come from outside of the city of Minneapolis. They run a flower shop in your community. They may do something to do with signage in your community. They may have something to do with the trucking group in your operation. But those 1,000 contractors, and I ask them all the time, because I walk to the convention constantly, where do you come from? And we're very happy to welcome them to the city of Minneapolis, but they work and vote in your communities, not in mine. The taxes collected to pay for them are collected exclusively within the city of Minneapolis. So I am willing to answer questions on it. I feel very passionately about this, and I stand here, or sit here actually, very, very proud of the fact that we have been able to welcome big events to the state. Not only the conventions, but large events such as the Final Four, such as the Republican National Convention. By the way, as a quick aside, I was typing the RNC into my iPad here, and the spell check kept doing DNC. I don't know what that's all about, but it worked. But that event could not have taken place without the man on my left and the organization on my left that is funded by the taxes in collected only in the city of Minneapolis. So when I turn it over, if I could, to Melvin Tennant, I'll be obviously ready for questions.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Tennant.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, distinguished committee members. I just want to be able to fill in some of the blanks with some of the details relative to Minneapolis's efforts to book the Minneapolis Convention Center. Just as an aside, we are a nonprofit, separate corporation with a contract with the city to perform the marketing services on behalf of the city, and we've done that. This is now our 25th year, so we have a great long-standing partnership with the city of Minneapolis. Our offices are located downtown, but we have sales offices also located in Washington, D.C. Just to remind you that the convention center, the original part of it was constructed in 1989 with the expansion in 2001. Some of the competition that we're dealing with in terms of cities that are going after the same types of conventions that we are include Indianapolis, Chicago, Denver, Kansas City, St. Louis. So we are very, very competitive in terms of the types of cities that are going after some of the same events that we are. The mayor mentioned that the convention delegate spending is about $900 million a year, and those are spending dollars, not economic impact. And so we have great data that supports those numbers, so those are very solid numbers. In terms of the efforts that Minneapolis undertakes on behalf of Minneapolis, our sales team generated last year close to 500,000 future room nights for the city. And of those 500,000, about two-thirds of those were directed to the convention center. So if the convention center didn't exist, essentially two-thirds of our operation would not be able to function. To give you an idea, sir, of some of the events that we've been able to host within the convention center on a statewide basis, we are a regular host of the School Boards Association, Minnesota School Boards, the pork producers. We've hosted the school superintendents from around the state. But we're also very, very fortunate to host some of the largest public shows in the convention center, primarily within the first quarter of the year, the Home and Garden Show, the Boat Show, the RV Show, the Auto Show, which is coming up early next month. And those are actually, over the last couple of years, are beginning to see increased attendance. And we see a lot of those attendees from around the state. So we clearly believe that our convention center is a statewide asset that really benefits all of our citizens. And I'll pause right there, sir, just to see if there are any questions that we can answer and we can fill in any more of the blanks that you have. Thank you.
Sir, thank you, Mr. Tennant. We also have Mr. Jeff Johnson, a Convention Center Director. If there's questions, you may want to make a few comments. Do you want to join us down here, sir? And then also Kevin Carpenter, I believe, is here to answer a question. To Mr. Tennant, though, quickly here, is there any talk of getting a Hard Rock Cafe back?
We're on it every day, sir. That was a big loss for us, but that's...
We got to get that back.
Yes, sir.
Somehow. Okay.
I'll note that. Thank you.
Okay. And, Mr. Ten, you had mentioned that if the convention center did not exist, this bill doesn't say the convention center is not going to exist. We're just looking at it. We've got some questions about the financing and how this whole thing works. So we're not trying to get rid of the convention center. We love the convention center.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Your Honor.
On that question, one of the things that's important about this, the convention center, as I mentioned, and the convention business, is one that looks way out into the future. As I mentioned, we are now booking into 2018, but we are actively looking at conventions that will be booked in 2020 and beyond that. Our ability to do that is dramatically impacted by our ability to continue to control the taxes collected only in Minneapolis. If this committee changes that, that will have an immediate impact on our work. Now, what's important about that is that we don't do this job in a vacuum. What happens at the same time is in Indianapolis, Louisville, cities that didn't used to be our peer cities, Kansas City, we used to mop the floor with them, frankly. They have now dramatically overinvested in that area. And so the second we take our eye off 2020, they are on the ball. And so this does have a very direct impact. One final point that I forgot to mention up front, but I wanted to clarify. While it is clear that part of these resources go technically to the general fund of Minneapolis, there is a very, very strong wall around them. They are for police and fire protection and public works protection, allowed only for the convention center. I want you to understand how big the wall is between those. During the period of time where crime had been rising about 6 years ago in Minneapolis, and we were desperate to find ways to fund a police officer any way we could, we tried desperately to figure out some way to use this to fund beat officers in the city of Minneapolis, and by law we're not allowed to do that. So I just want to make sure you know there's a firewall between those. I wish there wasn't as much. If there was any way possible, I could have used these in the height of a crime wave for a cop on the street. I would have done it, but we can't. It's only for this statewide business.
Okay, Ms. Dalton, a quick question here before we go to Mr. Johnson. The way the laws were in 86, is there any end date, or does this tax just go in perpetuity, the tax we're talking about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the original law written in 1986 actually put a cap of $118 million. On the construction, and so there would have been essentially an ending date. There isn't now. That was pretty much removed in 1998 when the cap on the bonding was removed.
So this goes into perpetuity and just on autopilot.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Mr. Jeff Johnson, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Jeff Johnson, Executive Director of the Minneapolis Convention Center.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you.
Did you want to provide any additional testimony, or are you here for questions?
I'm here for questions, really. I mean, I think what we're really talking about here is that we have this statewide asset. It's valued at about $600 million, the replacement cost, and we can't just sit back and not keep investing in the building. And so we've got some plans going forward on what we want to do to make sure that we stay competitive and invest in the building with capital dollars and making sure that that's available. If we stand still, as the mayor said, the other cities and the other competition that's out there will surpass us, and we will not be able to attract the type of visitors and the type of convention attendees that we have in the past. And so this money that we receive through these taxes helps us in order to remain competitive and helps us so that we don't get so far behind that, let's say, in 2022, we would have to come back and say, you know what, we need a new convention center. We need a lot more money to build a new convention center. So this money will help us to stay competitive throughout that time.
Well, one quick question before we go to members' questions here. How do other convention centers around the state operate? Do they have the, maybe this is for Ms. Dalton or anybody that could help me out here, do other convention centers, are they allowed to use for daily operations, sales tax, for daily operations?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, generally, no. They cannot use general sales taxes. The exceptions are City of Duluth has their half-cent sales tax they can use for pretty much whatever they want to. So if they wanted to use it for the deck, they may use it for the deck. In a few other cities, we have allowed them admissions taxes or food and beverage taxes to pay ongoing operations costs of their convention centers. For example, Rochester and the City of Mankato.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. May I
Your Honor.
I'm sorry, may I address that issue? While we share a name, the convention centers of the state are in different businesses. The convention center in Minneapolis primarily attracts conventions that attract people to the state of Minnesota. The other convention centers, which we think are very important, are primarily about locally based shows. I was a beginning reporter. One of the first stories I covered was the construction of the new Minneapolis Convention Center. And at that time, one of the promises that was made by the city was that by doing this more aggressive convention center, we would not compete with the other convention centers in St. Paul, Duluth, Rochester, St. Cloud, etc., but instead we would go after national business. Promise, deliver. The convention center in the city of Minneapolis is filled with people who come from other parts of the country and the world who spend money here. And by keeping us in that business, we're not going to wind up competing as much with the convention centers in the other parts of the state.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Just a follow-up question. Do other convention centers around the state have the ability to you know, use for general fund use, kind of the general fund of the convention center and to pay off bonds? Is that unique to Minneapolis, or is that just maybe Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is actually unique to Minneapolis, where they can use their half-cent sales tax to pay not only bonds, but operating deficit and promotion of the convention center.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if the mayor might be able to answer this question. Are there any other major cities in the United States that are able to fund this kind of your operations without this type of tax? And I'm just wondering, I mean, maybe there's some things you haven't thought of yet, like a bake sale. Have you had a bake sale?
Your Honor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, well, I do believe bake sales are helpful. They obviously don't fund the ongoing maintenance of the building and such, but this is done differently around the country. I think the committee would benefit by looking at that. What I believe you would find would be many, many cases where states are far more participatory in this work, that the work of attracting delegates from around the country is very often seen as part of the state's work. I believe our state is fairly unique in having the city of Minneapolis alone carry that burden for the state.
May I add on to that, just to give you a real-life example? Philadelphia's convention center is actually called the Pennsylvania Convention Center, and they have just completed a $750 million expansion with significant support from the state. And again, that's an example of that state looking at a major city's convention center being a statewide asset.
Okay. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm wondering, so what I'm hearing is, because in my traveling around the United States, I look at my hotel bills and I look at my restaurant bills and I see the taxes attached, and I always see them as significantly higher in major cities. And I can't think of one where those charges have been the same as they were in other parts of the state. And so what you're telling me now is that oftentimes that's the state in which that city lies coming in to take care of that, and then they fund the major projects in those cities like a convention center or whatnot as well, and that Minneapolis is unique for that reason, that you guys end up having to do the work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, there are a series of different ways that this is done. In some cases, there are more of the sales tax stays in a community than is taken out. You know, Minneapolis produces $400 million more in sales taxes. We send $400 million over to the state. In some cases, the city captures more of that. In others, there's an actual state participation. Mr. Tennant mentioned Pennsylvania. I know, for instance, when our convention center was being expanded, I was in an interview with legislators and others in McCormick Place in Chicago, where the state put money into that. And we asked that person, how did you convince the state to do that? And the guy in kind of the Chicago accent answered, we've made it clear to them it would be in their best interest to do that. So I don't know what they did in Illinois, but I know that that in many other places, the state is a much deeper partner in a business that benefits the state.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, I'm pretty sure no one's going to come in and say to you that either your brains or your signature will be on this bill before the end of session. And I appreciate being worked with in the way Minneapolis officials are instead of Chicago. But I just kind of wonder, I don't know how else we're going to do this in Minnesota other than these extraneous taxes, because I guess I see every other city doing that, because it ends up costing more. So that's all, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesh, how many Chicago politicians does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know, Mr. Chair.
Four. You got a problem with that?
That's good. Thank you. Yeah. Definitely not, Mr. Chair.
Okay. As I look at the funding and so forth here, and the it seems like there's quite a bit of extra authority that Minneapolis has here. I guess it would beg the question, why should Minneapolis be treated differently than any, and you've been kind of touching on this, but if you're just asked the question, why should Minneapolis be treated differently than other convention centers around the state, what would your answer be?
My first would be to ask any of you, if you've ever run a sales course and you say that you should, if you one of your salespeople comes in with an idea that by making a certain investment you can bring in a whole lot more money, you often do that. In this case, a number of years ago, and as I say, I remember as a young reporter covering this issue, the state made a deal with the city of Minneapolis and said, we want you to get out of the business of competing with other cities in the state. We want you to go into a new business, go into the business of doing more to bring new dollars into the state, and you should look at us and say, thank you, Minneapolis, for delivering.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm not sure exactly who to direct this to, so I'll throw the question out there, and if the testifiers want to respond or if Ms. Dalton wants to chime in on this. But it's my understanding that there is a reserve fund that's established from the taxes that are collected, and that's held. And the figures that I have from research, it's about $21 million. So I don't know if Mr. Johnson or Mayor Ryback, if you want to confirm that.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we do have a reserve, and the reserve is really for three things as we look forward. One is for cash flow purposes, financial purposes, making sure that we have the cash on hand, because our business is somewhat cyclical, and so making sure that we have money in the savings account for when the bills come due is very important for us from a financial standpoint. The second real reason that we have that reserve is more of a rainy day fund. Again, as I mentioned, we have a $600 million facility, and if something breaks, it costs money. And so we want to make sure that we have some money set aside for those emergencies that we can go to in order to repair them. And the third is really because we have bonds out on the convention center, we want to make sure that we have some money set aside to help us and make sure that we can repay back those bonds, but also to make sure that when there's opportunities to refinance those bonds, we have the cash on hands to do that. Over the last few years, with the great bond market that's been out there, we've been able to refinance many of our bonds. That's saving money to the state, saving money to the city in millions of dollars. And so those are really the three reasons of why we have that reserve, is to make sure that we're financially doing the right things.
I would also, Mr. Chair,
Your Honor,
just if I could add, I would also say this is a great example of how smart, prudent fiscal management has allowed people to get over a crisis. Think in terms of what 9/11 meant for travel and what the Great Recession has meant for travel. There was an extraordinarily negative impact on that. This convention center was able to weather that because the reserve was there for exactly that rainy day. One final point, I remember one particular rainy day when a tornado came through South Minneapolis and hit the roof of the convention center, and I stood with the people from the convention center as water actually came in. We did have the reserves to be able to address that before waiting for the settlement to get that done. Now, that roof is old. That roof is part of a building that has been maintained very well, but kept up ongoing to make sure that we're doing that. So we're not only putting money in reserve to weather tough times as we have, but also doing the same with the building. So again, we don't have to come back here and say, oh, gee, the whole thing's obsolete. Let's spend tens of millions of dollars more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. Appreciate that. That's helpful. And are you projecting that the reserve will continue growing? And is there some fiduciary standard that you're using to establish, you know, what size of a reserve fund and that? I mean, I guess this harkens a little bit to a discussion we had over the Twins ballpark. Representative Vincheski and others, we engaged in this a little bit during the tax conference committee last spring. And so, you know, at what point is the reserve adequate? You know, the taxpayers are continuing to pay into this, and as the chair has pointed out, it's in perpetuity. So at what point are the reserves enough, and does the money get diverted to some tax relief for the citizens who are paying?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, committee members, we do not have a number, a percentage that we are trying to attain. One of the things that we are doing is working really hard to maintain that reserve. Just a few years ago, we were projecting that if nothing changed and nothing changed in the way that we were working with the building and managing the building, that we would run through that reserve by the year 2016. We've been able to stabilize ourselves just this past year. We've gone through a very difficult time of layoffs. We've laid off 25% of our staff. We've done a lot of things over the last few years as far as energy efficiency and been able to reduce our energy use by 24%, which is about $1 million a year in savings. And so we're trying to run the building more effectively, more efficiently, because we know that this money is very important and can be used to, again, get a greater return by bringing people to the city. So going out into the future, it's hard to say exactly what number we want that reserve to be at, but we do know that we have to continue to invest in the building, and we have to continue to put money into the building. And so that will eat up money as we go forward. When the bonds are done being paid in 2020, we will for sure need money to, again, go to that next level of making sure that the building is competitive for the future.
Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so, and just to clarify on that point, so the reserves can only be used for maintenance or the bonds on the building and no other purposes. Is that correct?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, committee members, the reserves and the convention center money is for convention-related activities. And so it can be used for convention-related activities. So it can't be used for, like the mayor was saying, we can't put that money towards police on the street. We can't put that money towards public works projects throughout the city. It has to be used for convention-related activities.
Representative Bloom.
Thank you. So, and so there is either the City of Minneapolis Council's adopted, you know, policies where that's reserved, or is there something in the statute that indicates those are reserved for those purposes?
Mr. Chair,
Your Honor.
Yes, it is in the statutes, Mr. Chair and Representative, and believe me, I've tried. There is no way that we can get access to that, and if you need any proof of that, look at 10 years when we have weathered huge fiscal challenges and looked under every possible rock, and we couldn't break into this safe at all. And that's the right thing to do. But also recognize that the other way that we could address this would be to say that recognizing the convention business generates a lot more revenue when you have a local trade show than it does having a national or international convention that brings delegates. We could turn this more into a trade show sort of place that had more local shows that are more lucrative and do less of the less lucrative business of bringing people into the state. That would be better for the management of the building, but it wouldn't be as good for the work that Melvin's involved with, is bringing delegates here. So A, we can't get at it, and B, the only other way we really have to do this, the only two other ways are, one, to financially restructure the building, and Mr. Johnson's being very modest. He launched a widespread restructuring of staffing in the convention center and significantly reduced the staffing, and as we dealt with yesterday, dramatically reduced the operating expenses of it. But we can't do anything to get at that reserve.
Representative Bloom.
Okay, so there you have no authority to spend the money on anything other than the building.
Correct.
That's correct. All right.
Representative Bloom.
Convention related.
Yeah, Madam,
Your
I'm
Honor.
Sorry to interrupt, but let me be specific. Convention related businesses. So the building or something involved with attracting conventions to the state of Minnesota.
Representative Bloom?
Well, I'm getting staff indications that maybe that's not correct.
Ms. Dalton, you help us out here.
Mr. Chair, Representative Loon, regarding the Convention Center Reserve, that is correct. Regarding the actual revenues from the taxes, that's not exactly correct, because we have given the city authority to use the money for other things if they don't need it for the convention center. In 1992, we gave them authority to use it for neighborhood learning centers, and in 2009, I believe, we gave them authority to use to direct some of the money to offset aid losses to the city in their general fund, and then we also gave them authority beginning in 2011 to redirect the money to neighborhood programs.
Representative Bloom.
think. Okay, I think that's an important clarification, so I appreciate that.
Your Honor.
Representative Lewin, just to clarify the operative point there that I understand is the state gave the city ability at that time. We do not unilaterally have any ability to do anything, as I understand this. We need authority from the state for an event.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the 2009 law actually did give them authority in 2009 and 2010 to offset aid cuts in their general fund if they did not need the money for the convention center. And there is ongoing authority beginning in 2011 to use it for neighborhood programs if, again, it is not needed for the convention center and related projects.
Thank you. And I think, did you have a comment for that,
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the way I understand it is that if the bonds are paid off and there's excess money, then the city could potentially use that excess money. But there is no excess money. And so in 2009 and 10, we were not able to use any other money for other things other than what was at the convention center. So my understanding was that it's excess money. If there's excess money left over from the taxes in a year, those would be able to use. We don't really look at the reserve as excess money because, as I explained it, we believe that it's a good financial practice to have some money in savings for such an enormous operation that we have. We don't think that it would be prudent to run without some money in savings.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think, you know, I'll allow others to ask questions, but I think the point I was trying to get to this is, again, I think there needs to be some kind of standard for what is a prudent amount of reserve, because, again, if there's a fairly free system for spending excess amounts and there's not a designated amount of what's a prudent amount to reserve, then, you know, again, this tax is not just for the convention center. It's for general purposes within the city of Minneapolis. So I'll let it go at that, Mr. Chair.
And Mr. Chair, we welcome a discussion very much of the reserve strategy. We'd love to have a detailed one with Kevin Carpenter, our financial director, and others. We want to go into that with an understanding that with an aging building and with a very, very good history of using that reserve appropriately, we want to make sure we have enough left. But I don't want to let stand the idea that this is just for general purposes in the city of Minneapolis. It's not. And we do not have that unilateral ability to do that. There are state exemptions if there is capacity, if we come to you, et cetera, et cetera. But we do not have unilateral ability to use these dollars.
Thank you, Your Honor. One thing, I don't know, I can't remember who pointed this out, but one of the justifications for a larger reserve was for if a storm comes and blows the roof off. And I don't know if that's a good example, and if there's other emergencies, I mean, you have insurance to take care of the roof, I hope. And the other issue is, if there's an emergency, don't you have some bonding authority locally to take care of some of those things so you wouldn't have to carry such a high reserve?
Mr. Chair, I think what we were talking about there is that we're able to react quickly. When our roof leaks or when we don't have a roof, we have to react quickly because we have an event coming the next day, the next week. And so this cash reserve allows us to, again, cash flow and pay for that to be done while we wait for some of the paperwork and things to be done from our insurance companies to get that money. So
you might need a new insurance agent.
Yeah.
I know someone.
But those damages really are one piece of the reason that we would have something like that. But it is something that would happen that is not in our long-term capital plan, something that wears out faster than we anticipated, that we would potentially have to go in then and go into our reserves to pay for because it would not be in that year's capital budget.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We've got quite a few questions here. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I don't think we've spent enough time kind of explaining how this convention center is different than the others in the state, in that it really is to a national or international scale, and when it has one of these large conventions, my understanding is that we fill the hotel rooms not just in downtown Minneapolis, in fact, a lot of people prefer to be in Bloomington, but also in Roseville and in St. Paul, and I'm wondering if our guests might be able to talk about how that works and how we're sharing this in terms of the regional benefits.
Mr. Kenneth?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, absolutely, and I meant to articulate a little bit more on that point. As you know, a visitor going to a community doesn't really want to focus on city limits, and that visitor doesn't really care what city he or she is in. So on major conventions, the most recent one that I can think of last year was the American Legion. Also, we had a railway interchange convention, which was a group of four separate railway industry associations. Hotel rooms expanded beyond Minneapolis into St. Paul, into Bloomington, Roseville. So that's very, very frequently that happens. And in fact, we have an ongoing partnership with our peers in both Bloomington and St. Paul on an ongoing basis, and realizing that a lot of times the facility itself where a meeting takes place may happen to be in Minneapolis, but we clearly, on a major, major convention, we have to have the support, and we do have the support of all of the communities within the metro region. So yes, a community-wide, a metro-wide, rather, sales effort is usually what takes place on major conventions.
I think it's also important to note, Johnson, that the taxes are not collected in those other communities either. The taxes are collected in the hotels in downtown Minneapolis. And so we're supporting all of this throughout the region, throughout the Twin Cities area, with the taxes collected in Minneapolis.
And Mr. Chairman, I think if you look at the other convention centers that we've helped fund, and mostly we've funded them much more generously on capital costs than this particular one, which has mostly been funded by Minneapolis, where their local option sales tax, they're oftentimes their hotels that are used for those convention are within the community that surrounds it. And I've seen the buses going through, shuttling people to the convention center and dropping off from other places. But I have to say, as a Minneapolis person, to me, it's been a real challenge to have 100% of our local option sales tax dedicated to a convention center that's mostly used from people outside Minneapolis, coming to events, you know, and spending their money. That's great, but they spend it as much in other areas. I always ask at the Hyatt, which is the closest hotel to the convention center. Every time I go to something there, I always go to the concierge desk, and I say, what's the number one question you get? How do I get to the Megma? That shows, I mean, what happens in terms of we bring people in, but then they go there, and then they stay after their convention, and they might go up north and fish or play golf or do other things. So, I mean, there are some spin-off events, as opposed to the local option sales tax in other communities. In St. Paul, you know, about a portion of their sales tax goes to their convention center, but the rest of it goes to their STAR program, which is about neighborhood and downtown economic revitalization. And it has always been my dream that, and in Duluth, it 100% goes to revitalizing that city. And it has always been my dream that when the convention center was paid off, that we would be treated like every other major city in Minnesota and have our local option sales tax actually help us as a city. And so some of those law changes that you noted, I brought in because I want, after the convention center is funded, I want it to be used like it is in every other major city in Minnesota for purposes that are more typical and to what the other large cities have been using their local option sales tax for. The other question I'd like to ask is, if we didn't have this sales tax, and these revenue streams for not just the capital, but also the ongoing operating and maintenance and capital improvements, am I correct in thinking that our only other option for keeping that going, if the city chose to continue to have a national scale convention center, would be the property taxes?
Mr. Tenant, or Your Honor?
The answer is yes.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and members, because that's a real concern for someone who represents the city with the highest property taxes. I think we're still number one, or we're always on the top 10 property taxes in the state. And, you know, we pay a lot of taxes, and we don't want to fund a national scale international convention center as an additional burden, in addition to picking up HCMC and all the other sorts of things that we do. And, you know, there's an 800-square-foot house on my block that pays $2,400 a year right now on property taxes. And, you know, I don't know that that's that they should be expected to pick up the operating costs of an institution that fills hotels and other communities, and that's major economic benefit is in the state sales tax that's generated by the purchases that people make when they come into our community. And so I just really think that we need to look at how we're treating others and whether or not this is really a proposal that would make a major increase in property taxes on owners with modest homes and pretty high tax bills.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. And you went to the Hyatt. I went to the Hilton. And this is maybe for Mr. Tennant. I went to the Hilton, and I went to that desk where they answer questions. It begins with a C. What do they call it?
Concierge.
Yeah. I went there to the Hilton, and I asked, what's the number one question you get from visitors? And you know what they said?
Where's the bathroom?
Where's the Hard Rock Cafe?
Oh.
Duly noted, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we'll talk afterwards.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, Mr. Johnson, if you have any research that shows where the revenue is coming from, what citizens in the state of Minnesota are paying the sales tax that you're getting charged from the liquor and so forth. Have you ever done any studies like that or done a survey of the restaurants to see where that revenue is coming from at all?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, committee members, as far as where the local people are spending their money when they come downtown or the state?
Where they actually reside
where
from,
they actually
Mr.
reside.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, committee members, no, we do not have that information. I would.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
Okay. I was just curious. I also wanted to make a couple comments, maybe some questions too. You know, I know Representative Loeffler had made a mention, and you had made mention as well, that this was attracting national and international type activities. And I just was curious, so I went online here to check out and see what some of the activities that are going on at the convention center right now. And I'm just concerned that, you know, you're competing with these other event centers that we have across the state, from St. Cloud, Moorhead, Mankato, Rochester, you name a whole bunch of them here that are in the state. And you've got events like the Physics Force, which is a local group of physics teachers that put on a good show that, you know, certainly could have been done at St. Cloud or Rochester or Moorhead or Mankato. You also have here the Home and Garden Show. You've got, I noticed in May, you have the Minnesota Youth Soccer Association meeting there, and, you know, certainly we've got the Blaine Center that could take care of that. You've got a whole host of other items that, you know, clearly these are local things that you're not going to see in Indiana, you're not going to see in New York, that you're not going to see anywhere else. And I'm just concerned that really, truly, you're actually, you know, competing with our other convention centers and at an unfair disadvantage to them, because they don't have this option that you have and this funding source that you have and that you've had for years, and that clearly was not intended to be that way. So then I decided to take a look at the city of Rochester to see what kind of events they hold. Because, you know, on the bonding committee, you hear a lot of different information of what these convention centers want to do with their facility. And all of them promote that they want to attract international and national events to their civic center. And that's why they come to the state, because that's their statewide pitch of why they need to have a civic center there. So I looked at Rochester's event schedule. And here, Rochester has, in the month of February, the Epilepsy Foundation's 26th Annual Chocolate Ball. Obviously, that's a statewide deal. You've got the Northeast Winterfest. You've got the New York DECA 2012 State Career Conference. You've got the Engineering Society 110th Annual Gala. You know, again, these are folks that they're doing national events that, again, would be in competition with some of the things that you're doing as well. But they do not have the advantage that you have. Neither does St. Cloud, neither does Moorhead, neither does Mankato, all of these other different convention centers. And I'm just curious why you should get that extra special attention that these communities don't. So I'm just curious about that. But then also, I also think that to some degree, you know, when this was put in place, 1998, when it was removed in 1998, excuse me, the cap was at $118 million for construction. And that's what we told the citizens of Minnesota was, you know, this is all it's going to be, but now we keep going and going and going. And you know who pays for this? The citizens in my district, my constituents that decide to go to Minneapolis, maybe go out to a restaurant for a night, they are paying for this convention center. They are paying for through the different taxes that you charge, and they don't get to see the benefit on a day-to-day basis like the your citizens in your community do. We do not have a convention center that is hosted by the city of Plymouth in my legislative district. But yet, my constituents are paying for this. And I guess I support this bill, Representative Davids. I'm glad you brought it forward.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. I have Lynn Chesky, Downey and Knuth. Runbeck, Downey.
Chair, may we comment on that?
Oh, Your Honor. Or Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we do attract local events. First quarter, we do have a lot of our what we call public shows, the auto show, the home and garden show, the boat show. What we attract as far as local shows that are different from the other community-based convention centers are that we are much larger. The home and garden show that we attract could not fit in any other facility within the upper Midwest. Really, you would have to go to Chicago in order to have such a big home and garden show. So the events that we are attracting are large events that could not fit in other facilities within the state, would not have the hotels, the restaurants to be able to accept the amount of people that we attract for those big events. So the local events that we have are generally much, much larger than the events that these other smaller local convention centers are attracting.
And I'll just, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Tenet.
Thank you, sir. And Representative, to give an example of some of the large events that Mr. Johnson was referencing that wouldn't be able to go to other facilities, this summer we have, for example, a large international fraternity, Omega Psi Phi, again using most of the convention center. We have booked into the future the National Education Association, which will bring in about 40,000 people utilizing hotel rooms all over the metro area. We talked last year also about what we hosted last year with the American Legion Convention. And just to restate what our purpose is, we have our sales people focused primarily on national events. That's really what we do. And as I indicated, of the roughly 500,000 future hotel room nights we book each year, they are national conventions, and about two-thirds of those go to the convention center. We are dealing with and competing against on a daily basis Indianapolis, Denver, Chicago, and we really evaluate those as our competitors because those are the cities that we lose the most business to, and it's not often that we find ourselves in direct competition with other cities around the state. And I know there may be examples from time to time, but in general, we're set up for attracting national conventions, and that's how our sales force is deployed.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And with all due respect, though, you are competing with these other communities. You've got events here from the University of Minnesota. You've got events, as I mentioned earlier, the Minnesota Youth Soccer Association. All of those are a direct competition to these other community centers. These are not large events, and yet you're taking that business away from those different community centers, and you have a much greater advantage because of the financing system that you have here. So I just have to disagree with your analysis of it, but thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Your Honor.
Mr. Chair, while I would agree that our schedule in the winter months, when it's very difficult to attract conventions from outside of Minnesota in January and February, is disproportionately local compared to what we normally do, the primary business of this convention center is to attract conventions from other places. We are the only convention center in the state that is doing that, and that's absolutely clear. If Mr. Chair and Representative, the idea is that you feel that taxes collected within a locality help get taxes from other places, then another way to fund this would be a regional tax that would have members from my community going to your community, picking up the tax, and somehow we can share all that together. Minneapolis is treated differently. We actually are carrying a much larger burden with far less state involvement than almost any and perhaps any of these other facilities. And I believe, Mr. Chair, the committee would benefit by looking at the history of how much state funding there is in this. I happen to strongly support the idea of this bonding bill supporting the Rochester Convention Center. That's a good thing for Minnesota. Rochester's role as a medical center is a good thing for Minnesota. We can couple that with visits to Minneapolis. But frankly, it would be downright bizarre if the largest city in the state had no local visitors coming. We certainly wouldn't wall off the largest city in the state from having no local shows on that. We have a convention center that attracts primarily those from around the state. And one of the benefits that accrues to people in the representative's district is that restaurant that your constituents go to is primarily supported by the convention dollars of people coming here, and it really wouldn't be there if it wasn't for a lot of these other folks coming in, the theaters that we have and the others that are the attractions that make this a lively place that people from around the state come in. And if we agree that people from outside of Minneapolis spend money in Minneapolis, Minneapolis is an exciting, vibrant city because this convention center attracts dollars here that, by the way, bring sales tax to the state.
Thank you, Your Honor. Two things here. First of all, members, get prepared for this same type of debate as in the bonding bill. There are several cities looking for convention centers, and the question will be how do we fund them? And so just keep that in the back of your mind, if you will. And also, if I could talk offline, because we've got a lot of folks who want to ask questions with Representative Loeffler, because the word's been used several times here, the burden of national conventions. I don't know if I'd call them burdens, and I don't need an answer now. We'll visit later, but the burden of national conventions, I think, is that what we want?
Mr. Chair, from my perspective, I would say, well, having this all on a property tax would be a burden. We willingly and aggressively stand up and love being in the business of attracting conventions. One of the best things we do in this city is attract people to one of the most exciting cities in the entire world. And we willingly stand up as the logical place to do that. So we consider convention businesses to not be a burden. We love doing it.
Oh, so you're okay. I get it. We'll talk later. There's a lot of folks who want to talk here. And you could even make it more exciting.
The Hard Rock Cafe. Hard Rock Cafe.
Okay, Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, you're a really punctual chair, and I actually came early today, and it hadn't started up, so I went back to my office for a minute, so I might have missed the first few minutes, but if this didn't come up, I mean, we're about an hour into the hearing, and no one's talked about the Vikings yet, unless that was in the first couple minutes. So,
Representative Lencheski, this bill and the Vikings are totally separate.
Well, okay.
Or I should say it like this. There's nowhere in my bill that has anything mentioned of the Minnesota Vikings.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to mention the Minnesota Vikings. Or maybe it's the Minneapolis Vikings.
Can somebody please speak to my bill?
Yes. Well, maybe it, Mr. Chair, maybe it'll be the Minneapolis Vikings. I was the author of the bill to rename the Twins Stadium, the Hennepin County Twins. And if the Minneapolis folks get saddled with this, maybe they can be the Minneapolis Vikings. But nonetheless, Mr. Chair, I do have a question for the mayor. And I should mention there was this good line of questioning, I thought, from Representative Loon, trying to figure out how does the money work, and Ms. Dalton was throwing things in, and there's a lot there. I think one point of clarification that shouldn't get lost on the committee is the ability for Minneapolis in 09 and 10 and beyond to do a little neighborhood stuff, which, trust me, I'm not a fan of this stuff. I think St. Paul shouldn't have that STAR program. I don't think that's the right uses of sales taxes. But we did in Hennepin County benefit when we refused, as you all recall, to extend their TIF districts another 25 years. We forced their TIF districts on the tax rolls as they should be, and therefore all of Hennepin County, not just Minneapolis, saw property come out of the tax rolls, and what they lost is these neighborhood funds. So there was some, you know, activity then at that time where there was, you know, all the Minneapolis legislators were very involved in this. There was lots of wars going on. Who would get these neighborhood dollars? And so all these dollars came on. And the whole state needs to know this. That means Minneapolis got less LGA also because more tax-paying properties came on the tax rolls, as it should be. It's a needs-based formula. So there was a lot of give and take in the whole state in that provision that's kind of all tucked in there, much too much detail. But I just, you know, I want people to know that it wasn't quite as simple as was being kind of gone through there. But I will say to the mayor and to the Minneapolis, you know, there has been state participation. You acknowledge that. I mean, the bonding bill was all of us and all of our residents helping the convention center. And there's no doubt about that. And I have very mixed feelings about this bill. You know, my city, for example, would have a 14.275 8% tax on our hotels, much bigger industry than yours, and you'd have a 10.275. So it's very competitive disadvantage for the city of Bloomington if the chair's bill were to go through. However, you know, I actually think all these entertainment taxes, liquor, lodging, hotel, entertainment, that's what this stuff's for. That's for convention centers. It's for this overburden stuff. That's what we want. We want the people to come in and visit to pay them. But the sales tax is a different question, because the facts are that the general sales tax, yes, everybody helps pay that when they come into Minneapolis, but the people who reside in Minneapolis pay more than anyone else. Representative Loeffler is absolutely right. But if Bloomington, you know, if I go eat out dinner in Minneapolis, I pay, but those residents pay day in and day out every time they buy toothpaste. And that was the case with the Hennepin County sales tax. We all got stuck with it for 30 years for every single purchase, whether we ever went to the stadium. So I think, you know, both sides have kind of good arguments here. There's just a lot of stuff to think about. And then, you know, we throw in sort of, you know, Representative Loeffler was talking about, well, people come and they want to go to the mall. You know, I think the mayor would acknowledge there's far more visitors to the Mall of America than to the convention center a year, by a long shot. So, I mean, it works both ways. 46 million people come to the Mall of America every year. And, in fact, for a long time, we used to get mad at the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul because they would put on their Convention Bureau website, when you go on it, a big picture of the Mall of America. And we'd always say, hey, if you hate it so much, quit sticking it on. I think they've both removed it now. But maybe Representative Anderson could look it up, because she's been finding all these things. But, you know, I do have to say that, you know, on all this stuff of competition, Mr. Chair, I think you should think long and hard about this. I know you have a bill to let every city have a local option sales tax. I don't know if you're going to pursue your bill, but, I mean, one way would be to say everyone can have them or no one can have them. But, you know, the picking and choosing, I mean, this bill does Minneapolis, but it doesn't do St. Paul, and so there's a number of problems around here on the face of this bill. But, you know, to get to the political question, really, about the Vikings, and, you know, one thing that's come up in my mind listening to this, and you said it, Mr. Mayor, you were the beat reporter on this story in 1986, And I would love for you to tell us what the trade-off was with Bloomington at the legislature, and how Bloomington got hurt as part of the convention center deal in the Minnesota legislature forever, and still is not happy about it. So when we want to go after Bloomington on all this, there's a reason Bloomington doesn't have a convention center, and it's because of this bill. So the beat reporter can explain to you what happened in the battles back in the day, but I do think that we're all aware that there seems to be, you know, maybe the chair will say this isn't about the Vikings, and maybe you'll say it's not about the Vikings, Mr. Mayor, but I think the outside observer, that being me and the public, thinks there's some move here to, you know, sort of call out the city council members in Minneapolis, and you know, I've met one or two of them over time. I don't know them. I wouldn't recognize them if they're in the audience. But I was just trying to think about it when I came here this morning. I thought, well, I'd kind of like to help out Minneapolis in this little debate. And then we kind of got into the mall. But if I were a city council member, I guess I don't think this helps the Vikings, this bill, get a Vikings. And I'm okay with that. But my understanding is the chair and you, Mr. Mayor, both kind of like the Vikings concept. I mean, I think you're kind of on the same side on that issue from what I've heard and hear you say over the years. So you both seem to want a Vikings stadium. But if I were a city council member, I'd say this is just a real win for me because, one, I still don't have to give them a Viking stadium. And, two, the sales tax is going to go away that my constituents pay. And I guess the downtown council wouldn't like it. But the hotels should say, boy, our rates just got more competitive so we can attract more to the convention center. And as someone who's, you know, not been a supporter of taxpayer subsidies for stadiums, I respect that you and the chair and others have come to the conclusion they want to find a way to get this done. And I'd just like to hear you tell us all what you think that bill does to that debate. Because in the end, the Viking Stadium proposal will come to this committee. And all these things will come up again. And can you just tell us, just as much as you can try to wade out of the hostile thing, I'm just asking genuinely, how is your city council reacting to this piece of legislation today?
Your Honor.
Mr. Chair, and first, just two very quick housekeeping points. Mr. Chair, did a great job of talking through the whole neighborhood issue. Just to clarify, that provision that someone here put into the bill was only if there was an excess to convention center. No dollars were ever used for that. Right. That was not done. On the Bloomington promotion, if you walk into the Minneapolis Convention Center, The largest banner you see is for the Mall of America. It's an advertising partnership bought in partnership with it. And I'm not always nuts about it, but we sell that. Bonnie Carlson, who leads the Bloomington Convention Center, we work very aggressively together. We sell these together as a package. Back on the history. If you really look at the whole this in connection with the stadium issue, this really is at the core of a series of things. Last year, there was a move at the end of the session to have these dollars used to build a Viking stadium somewhere else. And I believe in a Viking stadium. I believe in Target Center. I believe in a convention center. For the city of Minneapolis, and most important for the state of Minnesota, of those three buildings, the convention center is far and away the most important. This is the cash cow. So at that point, it became very clear to me that what we needed to do was to do a better job of what we're trying to do today, which is to explain that the city of Minneapolis has been doing a great job for the state of Minnesota to generate dollars for convention businesses. And so we set about doing a couple things. We first off looked at this revenue stream, these sales tax dollars, and projected what we thought would happen over time past 2020. We then asked Jeff and his team to go even further into projecting out in the future what needed to be done on general maintenance as well as competitive capital, meaning we can keep the lights on at the convention center, but all these other states in partnership with their cities are putting more in and are competing more aggressively with it. We asked Melvin to think about the marketing dollars. We looked at Target Center, which is part of this whole mix, and said, what do we need on capital there so we don't have to do with that what's happening with the Viking Stadium, which is going to build and become obsolete. Bless you, Representative Bercabina, through the chair. And finally, we had to look at, can we play a role with the Viking Stadium? But the key to all of this is the sales tax, and the most important building is the Convention Center. No other building we talk about, no Viking Stadium, no Target Center, is as important for the state of Minnesota as the Minnesota Convention Center that is paid for exclusively by sales taxes collected in Minneapolis. Toward the question of what impact that has on city council members, the city council is a hardworking group of people like the people here at the Capitol. Like the people here at the Capitol, they have many different opinions. Their job is to oversee not only the basic things the city council does, but some unique things the city of Minneapolis does, including an extremely complex convention business. And I would believe that the city council has the same focus I have, which is knowing these businesses. We know that while Viking stadiums and Target centers are important, the convention center is the most important business. And messing around with that jeopardizes a very important business. We're very open to long-term discussions about how we can run this business for the state. But I would say that's the key to this issue, is that more than anything else, be it in the legislature or the city council, more than any of these other buildings, we should make sure that these dollars that are collected only in Minneapolis continue to bring people from outside of Minnesota to generate sales tax here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynchesky. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in closing then, I think we'll all continue to watch all these things play out, and I think where we might just disagree is on the general sales tax piece, because I do think Minneapolis and other similarly situated cities with these large overburdened buildings, I mean, I'd like to have that, you know, for Bloomington. I mean, I don't have any of that, but it'd be nice if I could, you know, get some of you all to chip in for that. But, you know, what people often don't understand about these facilities, and I think you're trying to get people to understand this, is they make a lot of money for the state. They don't make money for the whole cities.
Right.
Take the Mall of America, all the money's pouring into the state coffers. It's not coming into the city of Bloomington. They don't even pay property taxes. It's just not. And stadiums are the same deal. I mean, you're right. Convention centers make a lot more money than stadiums. Bloomington's looked at all the stadiums, doesn't want them. They don't make money. So, you know, I think you're describing that accurately. Where I would disagree with you is to back up Representative Loon's comment. You know, these general sales taxes, they need to turn off. They really are hitting Representative Dabney's constituents. Me occasionally, when I visit, but Representative Dabney's constituents are paying for them every single day. And they're a very regressive tax, and that's why we wanted to turn off that twins tax. And, Mr. Chair, thank you for doing that. I mean, that was the right thing to do, that, you know, get what you need, because the twins are making sure they're getting everything they need to pay off all their debt and get everything right, but then it's got to come off. And I would say the same thing, and that's where I would disagree with you. These hospitality taxes, I think, are right on, but at some point, that general sales tax is too much of a burden for the people in Minneapolis for all time for this facility.
Mr. Chair,
thank you, Representative, Your Honor.
A point of it, because I think this is a really important point. I very much welcome the idea of what happens in the future. But let's recognize also that a convention center, especially an aging building, is one that needs ongoing revenue streams. Two points. One is we are booking already into the period of time in which people are proposing we cut off these dollars. And we have to make commitments to people. As we are in a very competitive business, we will have this, that, or the other resource in our city. Right now, we are in negotiations with people whose business to Minnesota is jeopardized by cutting that up. So, first off, to 2020, that matters. Beyond 2020, it matters as well. If the choice is that the state of Minnesota wants to get out of the convention business, you should tell us now, because we need to make ongoing upgrades to that. Unlike a single building that can get built, this building is built, but it needs to be maintained over time. I believe this state made a huge mistake by not doing more ongoing maintenance in the Metrodome. Because of that, we're talking about building a totally new facility. Our strategy with Target Center, for instance, is to not do what Charlotte did, which is to wait until the whole thing fell apart and come back for $400 million, but instead maintain that building. Let's not make that mistake with the convention center. Let it fall apart, cut off the funding stream long term, cut off our ability to compete in the market, not be in the same marketplace, and then suddenly try to rev this thing back up when we realize the millions and millions that we lost in the state. So this is part of an ongoing business. Keeping those dollars ongoing doesn't mean that there's some slush fund somewhere. Keeping these dollars ongoing means that we're going to keep a building competitive and we're going to stay in the marketplace. And God knows, I don't want Louisville or Indianapolis to be a better convention city than Minneapolis, and the state doesn't want that either.
Ursula and Chesky, or okay. Representative Runbeck, and then Downey, Knuth, and Davening. Representative Runbeck.
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I too arrived late, so I hope I'm not asking you to cover any ground that you already did. I'm just curious, we've heard some comments about the typical sunset on a tax like this. When the original plan was developed and you had kind of the operating model and the business plan and the ongoing maintenance and operation all laid out and came down to the state, was it assumed by the city that the tax would stay on forever, or did you have any kind of a model that would show you being able to manage this thing on your own absent the state funding if it had sunsetted?
Mr. Chair?
Your Honor?
First off, I would not characterize this as state funding. I would say taxes collected in Minneapolis.
Excuse me, correct.
But, but there is no scenario in which the property taxpayers of Minneapolis could support this facility. The facility was built with the anticipation of a sales tax, and its ongoing future depends on doing that. I frankly, Representative, can't remember, and by the way, Representative Lancheski, I can't remember what that trade-off either, so I guess
no
I wasn't...
Convention Center in Bloomington.
Oh, okay, good. So I guess I wasn't as good a reporter as I like to think. I certainly don't have the memory of it. But Mr. Chair and Representative, I don't recall what the deal was at that point. There's absolutely no way that this building operates on the property tax base of the city of Minneapolis that's already overburdened. It only operates with the sales taxes generated in Minneapolis.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Well, I heard the term cash cow referred to once in your presentation, and I just did a quick look, and looks to me like just on the basic operations of the facility, it runs at about a $60 to $70 million annual operating loss absent the sales tax and these other specialty tax revenues. So, again, just from a private sector perspective, that's a huge loser, not a cash cow, and you just confirmed that we can't support this thing without these kinds of tax options available to the city of Minneapolis. So I'm curious, when you compare that to other similar markets or similar facilities across the country, how does that tax subsidy compare to the ability to cover its own operating expenses? Are we in the middle? Is this one of the better ones, one of the worst ones?
I'll turn this to Mr. Johnson, but I do want to clarify. When I talked about this being a cash cow, the building itself is not a cash cow. The building produces revenue that makes this business a cash cow for the state of Minnesota. We generate tens of millions of dollars. I was giving you those quick estimates above that we're just sort of roughly guessing that our $900 million in visitor spending is about $60 million in sales tax. That's the cash cow, not the building. But Representative, if I could, Mr. Chair, turn to Mr. Johnson for more details.
Mr. Johnson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we do need the taxes in order to operate the facility. That is, so we don't bring in operating revenue enough to pay for our bonding and pay for all of our expenses. So we do need the taxes in order to operate the building. It is a very similar model to other facilities across the country. almost all facilities like a convention center are built and have some type of a subsidy and have some type of tax that feeds into that facility. And it's done because that investment brings returns to the state and to the location in large amounts. We say an economic impact of $200 million of just the people that are coming to the convention center. So it's an investment for a large return is why a convention centers are built. And our convention center is run very much like other convention centers across the country. And the subsidies, I would say we are in the middle range of subsidies across the country.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just heard two different numbers, and I don't need to know the difference necessarily. I heard $900 million and $200 million in terms of kind of statewide or regional impact. And I'm just curious, to Representative Anderson's point, do you have an ability to break that down between kind of local or regional activities that could probably go anywhere as compared to those that come to Minneapolis only because you have that size, shape, facility, and location?
Mr. Chair, Your first Honor? Let me clarify the numbers, and I'll ask Melvin if he can help me break that down. The $900 million relates to spending by visitors in Minneapolis. The $200 million relates to convention visitors just in the convention center itself.
Person down.
Thank you. Then just if a quick answer, or you can get me something later that would show the breakdown of the regional versus the stuff that only comes here because it's what it is from out of state, presumably.
And Mr. Chair, committee members, that $200 million number is basically that number of what comes to the city of Minneapolis that could not come to any other facility in the state of Minnesota. That is about 300,000 outstate visitors, convention goers that come to the convention center for many of the events that Mr. Tennant was talking about, the national type events that come. We don't add in the local attendees into that economic impact number. That economic impact number is the 300,000 or so visitors from out of the state that come for national conventions. Bringing in $200 million.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just a request. I don't think we have any of this in our packets, but maybe some kind of an outline of some of these economic impact factors for us as we think about this. And then, if I could, Mr. Chair, I'm looking at the financial plan, and I see that your reserve right now is about $40 million, and about $20 million of that is cash, it looks like. But what do you do with that reserve? How do you manage that reserve balance? And secondarily, how does that then intermingle with other reserves in the city?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair, committee members, that's a very technical question.
And I do believe we have Mr. Kevin Carpenter, the finance person for the city. If you could please come down and join us.
Stay here, but I'll put that here.
If we could get another chair there for Mr.
I think we got it right there.
Carpenter, I'd like to keep everybody here. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and then maybe Representative Downey could restate the question.
I'm Kevin Carpenter, the Chief Financial Officer for the City of Minneapolis.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Representative Downey.
Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking at this high-level financial plan, and it looks like the reserve balance is approximately $40 million with a cash of about $20, $21 million. And maybe you can just confirm that and just describe for us what you actually do with these reserves.
Mr. Carpenter.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the reserve is handled, and the cash in the reserve is handled largely, as Mr. Johnson suggested, as a cash flow mechanism, and it is, by financial policy, largely walled off from other activities. You will note in the financial plan a variety of transfers in and out of this fund for different purposes. For example, as the mayor mentioned earlier, we do transfer $250,000 a year out of this fund, which collects these taxes, to the general fund to provide explicitly for very unique public safety services at the convention center, that being the mounted patrol. Other than that, it all stays within this fund or goes to other very dedicated purposes for convention or convention-related purposes. You'll note we transfer out money to pay the debt service. Some of that goes on the financial plan, you will see, to what's called the parking fund. That's not the parking fund generally. That's for the convention center-related parking ramps that were built with the money when we did the bond issue. So it's a self-contained fund that has a series of transfers for accounting purposes only, and we maintain the activity, basically, convention center related activities, all in this fund. I hope that's helpful, but it's.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, following then, so the reserve balance again. I'm thinking it's $40 million, unless I'm reading the report wrong, and about 20 of that is cash. So where's the other $20 million? Is it invested in short term? Is it intermingled with other reserve accounts and invested according to some investment strategy? How do you use the rest of that reserve?
Mr. Carpenter?
Chair, members of the committee, I believe that would be the net asset value of that fund balance. I need to look at that in more detail. I'm not sure of the difference between the total fund balance and the cash balance. You will note that we have kept the cash balance in this fund at $20 million plus or minus, and expect that to be at that level going forward. And the fund balance part, we have a series of interfund loans that get accounted for through this fund, including some money that the city has lent to Meet Minneapolis to finance their ongoing activities. So it's largely encumbered fund balance.
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Sorry for, I apologize, but this is starting to take shape and it's helpful for me. And so the interest in investment returns on that cash and the $20 million that we don't quite know where it goes, I don't see where that returns to the fund. Is there a line in your statement that shows where the investment returns go?
Mr. Carpenter.
Chair, members of the committee, I believe on the schedule up in the non-operating revenues, you will see a note for interest. That, I believe, would include interest on the cash investment, such that it is $20 million of super safe investment. Doesn't get you a lot of annual interest these days, as well as the interest on the loans that this fund made to some of the other funds, including Minneapolis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Then one final question. So what percentage of your overall city reserve does this fund represent? And does this fund then help your kind of reserve status in terms of bond ratings and other financial capabilities that you have?
Mr. Carpenter.
Chair, members of the committee, this fund would be a part of how the bond rating agencies would look at our overall financial picture, but it would not be. It's not commingled with the others. They do, in effect, a snapshot of all of our funds. This fund is in reasonably good health with the $20 million reserve. That's not an inappropriate number from a rating agency perspective for a business like this. We also have, as I said, parking funds, and we have a fleet fund, which are in various stages of fund balance or cash balance relative to their operations, which the rating agencies look at each of those in determining our overall rating, which, as you know, remains AAA. And part of the reason we get that is because we have, across all of our funds to different degrees, we are nicely fund balanced and reserved, but not in excess.
Thank you, Representative Downey. Thank you, Representative Downey. Representative Knuth?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wish I could read my own handwriting as I made a number of notes here. It seems to me that the Minneapolis Convention Center is a good deal for the state of Minnesota, that it returns far more than it costs the state, that the cost, in fact, as others have pointed out, is increasingly being carried by the citizens of Minneapolis. as downtown Minneapolis has become a neighborhood and not merely a business office center. Perhaps that's a question for the mayor.
Your Honor?
Mr. Chair, we now have 30,000 people living in downtown Minneapolis, and the number is growing quickly. We've had two new apartment buildings that are very large apartment buildings that have been announced. For Representative Dabney's point, that's one of the largest populations of any downtown in the country, we're very proud of. So much of that spending downtown is from people in the city. We fully acknowledge that we're a city that welcomes people from lots of other places, but a lot of the spending in downtown now is from people who live there.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there's been some contentions that folks outside of Minneapolis don't benefit from this, but again, perhaps for the mayor, if the convention center is generating $900 million worth of business for the state of Minnesota, isn't that employing an awful lot of people outside of Minneapolis, generating a lot of jobs outside of Minneapolis, and paying a lot of bills for folks outside of Minneapolis?
Your Honor.
Mr. Chair, that would include the carpenter from Blaine. I was talking to at the convention center the other day, and I ask people that question all the time. And the workforce comes from all over the region. We did a study once of downtown employment. We didn't do it on the convention center itself, but downtown employment is pretty remarkable. It touches people from all over the state. Our fifth largest source of employees is Woodbury, so they do come from all over the state. I think, Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, another point that's really important in this is that it's not only people who work at the convention center, which at any given time is the number, but what's the exact number again?
At least 200.
At least 200 a day, but there are those 1,000 vendors, and those primarily come from outside of the city. Small businesses who have anything from a balloon shop to a signs show when you have a convention. So it's a place that certainly welcomes people from all over the state.
Mr. Chair,
Dabney?
And to any of the folks up there who might be able to help me understand this, there's been a contention that because the convention center requires a subsidy, that from a private sector perspective, that's a bad thing. And yet, I think increasingly of the business model where first you get offered something for free, LinkedIn. You can join LinkedIn for free, but then you got to buy the premium things. I think of coupons and sales and the like, where often businesses actually are subsidizing things to get you in the door. The bank that will give you $25 in the checking account if you come in and sign up, they're clearly subsidizing my checking account at that point. Can anybody up there help me better understand how that works in the private sector? Does the private sector always insist that every line of business generate a profit, or do they look at generating different levels of profit or subsidy across different lines of business?
Sure. And Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, the term lost leader is not one from government, it's one from business. And the idea is that there are certain parts of the business that attract. In a shopping center, for instance, your large anchor tenants are often virtually given the store. That was certainly in the case of the Mall of America. And that, because that generated all the revenue in the smaller businesses. The convention center is a classic loss leader in that the building itself could make money if all we did was go after local trade shows. But because we've moved it into this strategy where we're attracting a lot of national conventions, its revenue stream has to come from somewhere. There's not a convention center like this in the country that is self-supporting that I know of. Maybe there are, but certainly not in a community that is as wonderful as Minneapolis, but not generating as much people as, say, Harris or something. I don't know. Do you want to answer this? No.
Mr. Tennant?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. The comment on how the convention center might be perceived as a lost leader, but the effort that we put into it and the net benefit of it really helps us coordinate our public-private partnerships. For example, the two big hotels that have been mentioned earlier, the Hyatt and the Hilton, they would tell us that our efforts, Minneapolis, generates about half of their group business. So they definitely need that, and they need our marketing efforts, and they also need the convention center for them to be profitable. So I think you would get quite a consensus from the private sector, particularly in the major hotels, that this is a good partnership.
Representative Dabney?
I'll try to wrap up, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the time. I guess the perhaps a benefit that could come from your bill, Mr. Chair, would be a discussion of state policy on what the state's role is in the entertainment and convention business. Because what we have not had a policy. So we treat different cities differently when it comes to convention centers. When the state failed to step up to its responsibility, Minneapolis stepped up and paid for the expansion of the convention center so that $900 million could be generated in economic activity in the state, most of it outside the city of Minneapolis. When the state legislature wasn't competent enough to structure properly the purchase of the Target Center, the city of Minneapolis stepped up and bought the Target Center. Incompetence on the part of the legislature has led to, and the executive branch, has led to an overlapping series of structures that we fund one thing one way with one governing body, we fund another thing a different way in the metro area with a different governing body, different taxes funding different things, and we don't have a coherent strategy, largely because in the last 10 years when we've been doing a lot of this, we haven't had leadership from the executive branch that was willing to step up and take control and drive this. And I think if we can spark a conversation that looks at why do we have a structure that has St. Paul and Minneapolis compete against each other for some of this business in terms of entertainment, and does that make sense for the state, there could be a positive out of this bill. We do treat Minneapolis differently. We do treat the other convention centers differently. And the Epilepsy Foundation's Chocolate Gala last Saturday night, the 26th annual Rochester Epilepsy Foundation, I understand was wonderful. It was in Rochester, New York. And so was not, probably would not likely be held at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Members, I would just point out that some action taken by the 2011 legislature, or 2009, effective 2011, I would just like to read this. Beginning with revenues collected in calendar year 2011, to the extent that revenues from the tax authorized in Subdivision 1 exceeds the amount needed to fund the purposes of Subdivision 3, the city may use the excess revenue in any year to fund capital projects to further residential, cultural, commercial, economic development in both downtown Minneapolis and Minneapolis neighborhoods. So right now, as long as everything's being paid the way it's supposed to, you've got some pretty wide latitude on what you can do with those funds. So with that, members, we're not going to finish this up today. I said we're not voting on it today. We will talk about this more, and I think we've got several discussions going several different ways. And one of the purposes is when we're looking at these other cities from across the state that are coming with this, we need to have, I think, a coherent state policy on how convention centers are funded. So with that, we will be talking about this more down the road. Thank you, members, for your work and staff. Your Honor, do you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, I want to thank you, Representative. This has been, I think, inaccurately portrayed as being some sort of a hostile issue. I have found this to be a really important conversation where we're getting the right points on the table. The state needs to have a strategy of how we bring sales tax dollars in here. And I think we should put lots of things on the table. Frankly, I would like those visitors from all of America to be paying a sales tax on clothing so that we could be using that as part. That's a controversial issue, but let's put all this together and let's really, really talk about it. Minneapolis is the largest city in the state. We are treated differently in this case, but we're also willing to be the leader. We want to be in this business. We're the logical place to be in this business. And all we want to do is to make sure that that is done equitably. There's no question that part of this issue is clouded by all the discussion about stadiums and all those other issues. But frankly, I'm very comfortable and willing to be part of a big, open conversation where we put all this together and come up with a couple outcomes. One is we should not allow this state to become a second-class state that doesn't compete as the number one convention place, and frankly also for sports facilities. We're number one. We're Minnesota. I don't think we should settle for second best. And as the number one biggest city, we're happy to compete. But we do think this needs to be part of an open conversation about it. So I'm very happy you opened the discussion, and we look forward to further conversation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Carpenter, Mr. Johnson, and Mayor Rybick. Thank you very much. And Mr. Tennant, I believe you have an assignment, and I thank you for your testimony today.
That's my pleasure. That's more mine than
as someone would say, get her done. With that, good government all the time, we're adjourned.